Right. So tonight we're going to continue with what we were calling the mishaps of Bracious, or blunders of Bracious, or something along those lines. The bloopers of Bracious. I hate to put it that way, but as we mentioned last week, every day has its thing that seems to have gone amiss, and we have to figure out what exactly those things mean. So we're going to move on to the next day of Bracious. This is day two. And let's just read it's on the first page of the packet. Let's read the pasuk. Let's see what the pasuk is talking about, and then we'll understand the issue. V'yemer Elokim, Hashem said, Yehi rakia b'soch hamayim, there shall be a rakia in the water. So the Torah began that the earth was full of water, whatever that meant. The merchefes al pnei hamayim, that it says the ruach Elokim, the spirit of Hashem, was hovering over the water. So some idea of water in Bracious, again, not clear what these things all mean. And then Hashem, he commands, there shall be a rakia within the water. The word rakia is very hard to explain. I think the art school calls it a firmament, whatever that means. It's a firmament. What's a firmament anyway? Does anyone know? No one really knows what a firmament is. And even the Rishonim, there's a big struggle to define what exactly the rakia is. In a simple level, on a basic level, it's some dividing line in between Shemayim v'aretz, whether it be physical, or we'll see in a minute, maybe spiritual, but it's some divider which is going to delineate between the upper waters and the lower waters. So it's hard to know beyond that exactly what it is, but it's mavdil, as it says, vayhi mavdil bein mayim l'mayim, it separates between the water and the water. If you look in the Ramban, in the bottom right, I underlined his line. And the Ramban says this very, interestingly, he says, Zem inyam ayse Bracious, see, this idea of the rakia is some matter of Bracious. V'yal tikavim meni shechtov bo davar. And don't hope I'll write anything about it. Don't be excited and maybe I'll explain it to you. She'inyan hum, it's his Torah, it's a hidden matter. It's something that's a secret, it's Kabbalah, it's something beyond us. Ve'in ha'psukim srichim labir hazeh. And the psukim don't require us to explain it. Because the Torah doesn't really even spend time talking about it. It has one pasuk and done. The perush asur liyodav, and the explanation is asur to those who know it. For sure for us. So the Ramban is very mysterious about this. But I would just take out from the Ramban that there's certain things in Bracious that are kind of beyond us. We don't fully get what they are. We can put simple terms to them. But to really understand what a rakia is and what its function is, it's very hard. I mean, there are some mafarshim that explain it as some form of the atmosphere. It's a physical atmosphere dividing between the upper and lower. You can leave it to scientists to figure out which part that means. I think for our purposes, the best way to look at it is that we know there's a world of the physical and there's a world of the spiritual. And the rakia is going to be that world that divides, that dividing line between physical and spiritual. I don't think that we should understand it necessarily as a physical barrier or as a part of the atmosphere. But the way that many explain it, the Ramban himself seems to imply this later on as well, that it's the divide between the spiritual realm and the physical realm. That's what we call the rakia. So in other words, even though there may be some physical semblance to this rakia, I think for at least our purposes, we'll understand it as the divide between the physical and the spiritual. And
what is the shorish of rishka?
Rekka usually is like some sort of background or some sort of like setting, right? So, context.
Okay.
Roka Aretz al Hamayim, we say every morning. Hashem stretches the land out over the water. Roka Rek. So it's some sort of stretched line, barrier, divide, but beyond that, it's kind of mysterious to us what it is. But what it does is that it divides between the mayim lamayim, the water, and the water. Then just to read the next pasuk, just to see the rest of the concept. V'yasa kimas harakia, Hashem made the rakia. V'yavdel, and He separated bein hamayim asher mitachas l'rakia, between the water that was under the rakia, bein hamayim asher mi'al harakia, and between the water above the rakia. V'yichein, and it was so. V'ikra Elokim l'rakia shamayim. Hashem referred to the rakia as the shamayim, as the heavens, or the sky. V'yavavok yom sheni, and that was yom sheni. That's the second day of creation. So, at a simple level, the rakia is kind of mysterious how we understand it, but there are some other understandings that I think are worthwhile for us to explore a little bit. And then, like the Ramban said, in terms of its real explanation, it's really beyond us. But there is a Rashi which is on the next page here. And it's actually in Parshas Vayikra. We're going to skip a little bit now. And Rashi mentions a very interesting thing about the Rakia. So I bracketed it off. It's Pasuk Yud Gimel. This is a Vayikra Perek Beis Pasuk Yud Gimel. And it's talking there about, as Vayikra does, talking about Karbanos. And it says, V'chol Karban Menchascha B'melech Timlach. You should salt all of your Karbanos with salt. Salt with salt. You should put salt in the Karbanos. You should not cease to put the salt of the bris of Hashem, the covenant of Hashem, upon your menachos, your flower offerings. I'll call karbancha on all offerings, takriv melach, you should put salt. So the Torah, there's a mitzvah, there's a lacha that was done in the Beis Hamikdash. Every karban had salt put upon it. So there's a lot of explanations as to what this salt was. But it's very funny because we understand there can be mitzvah putting salt on karbanos, but it's actually referred to as a bris. It's the salt of the bris of Hashem. There's a covenant that has to do with salt. And it's very unclear to us what is this covenant exactly. Now every karban requires salt. But what is it? So many of Mefarshim try to explain the idea of salt. The Eben Ezra says that I have made a bris with you not to offer to me tasteless things, because it would be kind of a degrading to offer untasty things to Hashem, so they should have salt upon them. So it's funny when that's a bris. I mean, we understand that you want to give to Hashem delicious, even though Hashem doesn't eat them, but at least from our end, it should look like a very tasty thing. We understand that. Hiddur mitzvah, the mitzvah should be beautiful, the food should be tasty. But why is it called a bris? What's the covenant exactly? What's the agreement? This is different. Other mitzvahs aren't called a bris, like this one is. We know bris mila, but beyond that, it's hard to find. You know, Shabbos has a bris, mila has a bris, but you know, you don't find too many brisin. And for salt to be a bris, it's very strange. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that the salt is a reference to the concept that karbanos maintain the world. Chazal talk about the karbanos being kind of what keeps the world going, and salt preserves. So having a salt on a karban represents the fact that the karban preserves the world, that salt preserves foods. So there's some connection to that, and this is the bris of Hashem, that the world will continue, the world will keep going, but still a funny explanation. So Rashi here gives us a very interesting thing. If you look at Rashi, I underline on the bottom, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Rashi quotes from a Medrash, and Rashi says, Shabris krusa lamelach, there's a covenant made with salt. I mean, it's not a covenant with us, it's a covenant with the salt. From Sheshes may Brachis from Brachis, Shehuftechu ha'mayim atachtonim. The lower waters were promised. Likar v'mizbeach b'melach. They will be offered on the mizbeach as salt, because when you evaporate water, you'll get salt. We certainly see water. V'nisach ha'mayim b'chag also be offered on Sukkis as nisach ha'mayim, as the water carbon on Sukkis. So Rashi cites a medrash going back to our pasuk we discussed earlier, and we know that the waters were divided. There are upper waters and lower waters. And Rashi says that the lower waters are promised, you will get to also go up. Now you'll get to relate also to the heavens. So Rashi's alluding to is actually a medrash, which I have quoted here on the next page. Let's just see that. It's the back of this page, the medrash. This is really the medrash Rabbah only alludes to it, but the parish on the side quotes another medrash that gives you the entire story. So let's understand this story, what happened, then we'll understand more what it means. Let's read first the Medrash in the middle there, where I bracketed it off. Amar Rav Brechia, lo parshu mayim hatachtonim min ha'elyonim, elo bebechia. Rav Brechia says that when the upper waters and lower waters were divided, they cried. The lower waters cried. Hadahu dechsev mibechi naharos chibish. So it says that the rivers, from crying, you know, they were consoled. It was with sounds that Hashem placed the waters. And sounds means crying. So the Medrash Rabbah tells us that there was some crying, sort of sadness, some sort of remorse, as the lower waters and upper waters were separated. I guess it's kind of funny. Why were the waters crying? What was the problem? So look at the side here. I put a bracket around this other. This parish brings another medrash, and this gives you the full story. He says, "Inyan ze bar chavas lashim ba'agada shevi avan shat bedrashosav beparshas v'yikra." Ze l'shono. So this is the story. This is the story. Mam tachtonim nikru mayim habochim. The lower waters are called the crying waters. Lefisha b'shah shechal kosh baruchos hamayim. At the time that Hashem divided the upper and lower waters from one another, They put some above, whatever that means, we'll call it, you know, in the spiritual realm, and some below in the physical realm. So the lower waters, they cried. Amru oilanu, they said, oy to us, shelo zachinu liyos lemaila liyos krom liyotzreinu, that we were not zochet to be close to our Creator. We're stuck down here in this physical world, while our friends, the upper waters, get to spend time in Shemayim. It's not fair. And they cried. Ma'asu, so what they do? He'izu pneihem uvaku tahomos. So they became very, very stubborn, and they started cracking open all of the depths, and I guess the water could have flooded the world. Bikshu alos ach, and they wanted to rise up and flood the world. Until Hashem yelled at them. Shenemar goer b'yam v'yivshev. Hashem screams at the water and he dries it out. Amar Kosh Baruch Hu, ho l'chvodi asisim. Says, I made you for my honor. Kol kach ein lehem rishus l'mayim l'elyonim l'omar shira ash yidlu rishus mikem. So Hashem tells them, well, the upper waters can't say shira to me until they ask you permission. So you're going to be the ones who determine when the upper waters say shira, when they sing to Hashem. Shenemar mikolos mayim rabim adir mishpere yam. And furthermore, you will be offered on the Mizbeach. And Rashi added in also the idea of salt. So this is our gracious mishap now. Right? The waters were separated out, and that seems to be part of Hashem's plan. The low waters get sad. They start to threaten the world. Hashem says, stop it. Let's fix the problem. He says that, I promise you, you'll be given your chance. Number one, the upper waters will wait for you to sing Shira. And number two, you'll be offered the Mizbeach as Nisach HaMayim and as salt, so you will also be able to ascend up into the heavens. Because being offered the Mizbeach, that would be symbolic of the water actually getting its chance to ascend to the heavens with the upper water. So that's our story.
Waiting
now.
To get the approval of the low waters?
To sing Shira, yeah.
To sing Shira.
Right, correct. They can't until they have that approval, they can't sing Shira. So there's something about the upper waters dependent upon the lower waters in terms of doing their spiritual job of praising Hashem. It's also the lower waters being promised to be part of the Karbanos, and therefore they will get to rise up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in some way. So that's the Medrash. So now we have to figure out what this means. It's not just a cute story, right? This is like last week, we had some cute stories. It's not just a cute story. There's some deep idea of Bereishis is being presented in this Medrash. And as we prefaced last week, when you have something that Hashem created and then has to alter, or change, or appease, it wasn't an accident. It doesn't mean Hashem made a mistake. What it means is that there's an ideal for the world, and then there's a process of getting there. So here as well, that there's an ideal for the world that there should be waters that are together. The idea of waters separating, that's part of the plan, and then the waters coming back together again. It's three steps. They began together, they got separated, upper and lower, and then they will reunite in some way. That's the process we see over here. So what does it mean? What does it mean the water cried? Why did Hashem feel the need to appease the water? And what exactly was the plan for Bereishis? What's the significance of this story? So we have to deal with all these questions. So this is really a model. I think that this story, to us, we have to understand as a real model of the tachlis of a human being in Hashem's world. You know, what Hashem, this really hits at the core of what we're living for, and I'll explain why. So I'll just point out that it's very well known that the only day of Bereishis where Ki Tov was not said was on the second day. Hashem every other day said Ki Tov, that it was good. Hashem did not call the second day good. Why was it not good? Because simply there was separation. Things were separated out. The world was now, there was some discord. On the first day there's no discord. The second day you have some discord. So there's no Ki Tov in that. We'll explain more about that later. But the second day is not a day that's called Ki Tov, but every other day is. So to explain this all, I want to look at the next piece over here, is the Maharal. This is the Maharal Gur Aryeh. Gur Aryeh is the Maharal Sefer. It's a parish in Rashi. And usually it's a kind of a technical parish, but every once in a while he'll get off into a very deep explanation of a certain point Rashi makes. So this is the Maharal's commentary on the Rashi we saw in Parshas of Yikra about the waters, crying and how they were going to be restored to Hashem through the Karbanos and through the Nisach HaMayim. So this is the Maharal. So maybe we'll look at a few, I guess, two points. I'm not going to read the whole Maharal together. Brackets a few points off. Let's read the Maharal together. And the Maharal typically is a kind of a very difficult sefer to understand. He uses a very unique language. he speaks somewhat in a very, very encoded way. His ideas, unless you're more familiar with them, are not always so clear, but his ideas are very, very deep. So let's read a few lines of the Maharal together, and then we'll try to explain more about what his concept is. So if you look at the next page, I put brackets around the sections I want to read. His Yesh Medrash Hazeh, Davar Nela Ma'od. This Medrash has an extremely hidden point. Very important, deep and hidden point. He says that everything in the world, its goal is constantly rising up. You always go up in holiness, not down. So in other words, I've explained this to mean that everything in this world is created to reach its purpose. So we're stuck down here in this physical world, but the flow should always be upwards. Everything's trying to reach its purpose in life. Everything's trying to go up. So the lower waters were divided up from the upper waters, and they became lower waters. Initially, it was all this water. There wasn't upper, there wasn't lower. It was just lots of water. And then Hashem made this divide, and the lower waters became low. So these lower waters were not going up to their purpose. If the purpose is to rise up to Hashem, and they were deemed to be down here on earth, so they're going against the grain. Now, we're not rising up to Hashem. Why aren't we able to fulfill our purpose? So therefore, the lower waters were not willing to remain separate from the upper waters until Hashem promised them, you will get to rise up to your purpose. You'll get to be offered on the Mizbeach, and you will ascend to Shemayim. Sheyiknu ha'is'alus, and they were therefore will acquire, you know, their progress, their accomplishment. That's a very important line we'll see in a second. And that was through their separation to become tachtonim. So this first point the Maharal is making is that everything in the world should be heading towards its purpose. When something is cast down here in our world, as if it can't achieve its purpose of connecting to Hashem, so that's something that goes against the grain of Bereishis. Everything's supposed to be hitting its purpose. So Hashem says, I put you down here for a reason, and I promise you, you'll be able to rise up to your purpose. But through that, he says, you will be able to sheyiknu, you will be able to acquire for yourself your elevation, your accomplishments. So look down here, footnote 124, I underlined it. This is Rav Yeshua Hartman who put out this Perush on the Gur Aryeh. It's a very, very comprehensive Perush on the Gur Aryeh. He says, Perush, ha-mayim ha-tachtonim ne'osu li-parim me-mayim al-yonim, that what lower waters were willing to separate, because through this separation, they'll be able to come and acquire, you know, their high level. Meaning the upper waters were put at a high level, but they didn't earn that. They didn't acquire that. They were just stuck there by Hashem. Like robotic. You know, they're just put, okay, you are now high waters. The lower waters go through a process of achieving, becoming high, becoming elevated. And that creates a kin, that makes it theirs. Meaning, we'll talk about more of what this means for us. That makes it the lower waters now have accomplished it on their own, rather than they're just stuck there by Hashem. Achim hayo mikara belyon, if they were initially in the heavens, they would be lofty, ach lo haya behem kin yisawas, but they wouldn't be their own personal achievement. And that's a very important message for us, which we'll talk about more in a little bit. I just want to finish the Maharal. But that's his first point. So we have to view the waters, the upper waters, lower waters, as a model that you're always trying to achieve your purpose, which is to connect to Hashem in some way. You want to elevate yourself, you want to accomplish, you want to achieve. If you were just stuck there, then you didn't do it yourself. That's just Hashem, you know, just feeding you greatness. But we don't want that. We want to be able to achieve and acquire our own greatness. So Hashem makes lower waters, and Hashem tells lower waters, you're going to be able to achieve greatness. But it's going to now come from you. It's not going to come just from me sticking you in the right place. You're going to have to come from the lowly world here on earth and ascend upwards. And that's a whole different type of loftiness and accomplishment than just being stuck there on your own. Let's turn the page. Skip on the left column. I bracketed off the next piece. He says, "V'yinei masha kiblu chisaron v'hevdal min ha'mayim ha'olyonim." So the very fact that the lower waters, they were given a deficiency. I mean, they were stuck down here on earth. They're different. They're lower than the upper waters. Zachu lehem liyos krevim al mizbeach. They were zochah to go on the mizbeach. V'zet tzad lo haya zeh p'chisus lehem kishu enu gadol v'olam hazeh. So therefore, this isn't considered a lowliness. Then this world, they're lowly. Klal, at all. The matter is, ki miyut hametzius shel olam hazeh moral shu karov el hanivdal vim lo hayadavar zeh lo hayamayim nadalim min alyonim liyos tachtonim. So the Maral says another deep point. He says that when you're lowly in this world, that's a sign that you have so much further to go, and that your role really is to connect to something far beyond this world. I mean, something that very much belongs in this world, and it fits this world 100%, so there doesn't leave any room to connect to another world. Something that's considered lowly in this world, and this world is very deficient, that means that there's so much more it could do. It's made to connect to something more. It's heading towards its perfection. So if this wasn't it, then what good is the lower waters? You lost the place? You got it, there. So then, in other words, we're saying now, maybe we'll look back at this footnote here. Footnote 130. Perish, mach mashem mayim atachtonim, zachu likar l'gazbeach. When the lower waters, they merited to be put on the mizbeach, machmas kein ein hafradasam mea mayim alyonim horadasam mea madrega ramazu, nechshavas l'bchisos vashpala. The very fact that they were given the destiny that you will be able to ascend up into Shemayim, that shows that being put here on earth wasn't even, they weren't demoted. They weren't put down. It wasn't considered lowly. It's the other way around. This puts them on the same level as the upper waters, and even greater because they've achieved that purpose. So therefore, even since their separation was the destiny to go on the Mizbeach, that means that being thrown down here was not at all considered putting them into a low position. So that's the explanation. I think that's all the Maral I wanted to see. But let's explain this now. Let's see, the Maral is very deep, kind of esoteric, kind of out there. But let's explain what he means. And I think what he's describing here, and this really is the depth of this medrash, is the following point. We're talking about, you know, what's the purpose of a human being in this world? So there's a famous concept, I think we may have read it here last year at some point. It's said by many, but the Ramchal, I think, is the one who's most famous putting it into words. And he talks about the purpose of Hashem's creation is to do good. Hashem put us in the world to do good to us. Hashem is absolute good. So it's the darko shel tov lehitiv. If you're absolute good, then you have to do. You can't be good if you don't do good. So Hashem is good, which means he has to do good. So what kind of good does he want to do? He wants to do the best good possible. Now, if Hashem does a mediocre good, that's still not doing his best. So Hashem puts us in this world in order so he can do good for us. He is good, he must do good, and he has to do the best kind of good possible. I'm not going to be through it, but this is actually what we have here on the last page, and for me, we'll look at it later. Derech Hashem, he explains this idea in depth, that Hashem wants to be sure that he does the best for us possible. And that's the role of the human being in this world. We're put in this world just to receive Hashem's goodness. That's why we're here.
It's interesting. I'm fascinated. Salt is such a fundamental, you need it, yet you look at it and feel so why do I need this? It's on a chemical level, you realize, wow, you do need it. You can die if you don't have salt.
Right.
So here you're saying that this salt really is so vital, but it doesn't know it. It has no consciousness of it. So how does it have consciousness of going... I mean, I know it's a medrash, but
right.
How does it attain this consciousness that going to get?
Well, I think it's more as a mushel for us.
It's a mushel. Because salt
yeah.
is salt.
Salt doesn't have any consciousness.
But it has, right. For us, it says, it also, salt is very lowly, and we could be considered lowly, so there is a connection.
Right. Yeah, and like you said, salt is vital despite the fact that it looks lowly. It is a vital thing. So the derech, the way of good is to do good. Hashem has put us in this world to do good for us. Hashem won't settle for any good at all. He has to give us the ultimate good. Ultimate good is described as a relationship with Him, and the reward He gives us by being able to create that relationship. Because that's the ultimate good. Hashem is ultimate good, and the best you can do to do good is to give the ultimate good, which is Hashem Himself. However, Hashem knows the nature of the world, and this is a very famous idea, is that if you don't earn it yourself, then that's also not total good. When people give you freebies, when you get handouts, sometimes they receive tzedakah because they don't have money of their own, chas v'shalom. That's not a good feeling. That makes you feel that you're inept. You can't do it on your own. You're just receiving, but you're not actually accomplishing. It's not really yours. If somebody gets a gift, so you can't say that the person... So if you get a gift because you've worked so hard for somebody and they want to show your appreciation, that's kind of earned. people just giving you handouts, it's not really you. It's not something that you, it's not through your own hard-earned work. It's not, you didn't put in your time and your effort and your sweat to achieve it. So it just ends up being something which is nice to have, maybe easy come, easy go. It's kind of external to me, but it's not who I am. The best good is that which you earn on your own. That makes it truly yours. It makes it truly enjoyable. There's no feeling like accomplishment. Accomplishment is the greatest feeling possible. People who win the lottery and it's showered upon them, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, you hear awful stories what happens to them. Because it's just, it's not them, it's not who they are, it's not earned by them, and they don't know how to handle it. And we all know that feeling of, we feel that, you know, someone's giving us something we don't really deserve. We kind of feel like we feel more indebted to them, we feel it's not, doesn't really deserve it. America's a society where people live on freebies, people love freebies, but ultimately freebies are not what make you feel the best. What makes you feel the best is accomplishment. So Hashem says, I want to give you the best, but if I just give it to you, that's not your accomplishment. And you're not going to feel the ultimate good if it's just being showered upon you as a freebie. So therefore, I want you to work to earn this good. I'm going to give you opportunities again and again and again to achieve it, but you're going to have to earn it on your own. So instead of Hashem showering it upon us, puts us in the world, He gives us situations where we can make choices. We could choose right or choose wrong. We could do good, we could do evil. And through that, we earn our keep. It's no longer charity, it's not tzedakah handouts, but it becomes hard-earned salary. It's what we deserve. It's because we worked hard, we lived a lifetime, and we made the right choices. And Hashem, therefore, gives us this reward. This is the world of Olam Hazeh. That's what it's for. This is the world we call Tachtonim. It says there's Mayim Elyonim, Mayim Tachtonim. So there's water in the lower world, and that lower world is a world full of challenges. It's a world of confusion. It's a world of where we're supposed to earn our keep. That's what it's about. So Hashem made a division. Hashem said, here's the waters. I'm going to divide them to the upper waters and the lower waters. So let's explain this more in terms of our discussion, our mashal. If the whole idea that we're trying to portray is that these lower waters, they have to come down here in order to achieve and then rise up, like Maharal said, that they have to be put down here so they can be konas, they can acquire their good. So why do you have to have upper waters? Just put them all down here and say, water, okay, you'll get up here eventually. Then what's the point of having the upper waters and the lower waters? So that idea is the following. Let's say that we... Let's say that, you know, if there's no upper waters, that would mean that we don't really have any connection to the upper world. Meaning, if I don't have a certain talent, if I don't have it in me, I can't achieve it. So upper waters show the lower waters that you are shaykh to get there. It's possible. You can connect. Because look, you know, those are just like you, and they made it up there. So we see you actually belong up there. If you didn't have that, so then the lower waters wouldn't have any chance, because they don't really belong in the Elyonim. But Hashem says, no, look, you belong in the Elyonim. See, because no, your cousins are all up there. All the other waters are up there in the Elyonim, so you can get there. You have to just do your job in this world, and you'll reach it too. So that's, you have to feel that you have a opportunity to connect, and that opportunity is there because you know you could do it. Because look, people just like you are up there. That's what Hashem tells the lower waters. So if there is a pirud made, if Hashem makes a separation, so now the lower waters are meant to reconnect to the upper worlds. So same thing with us. And we have a neshama. And the Nefesh HaChaim describes, you know, at length how, you know, there's many elements of the neshama, and some of them are kind of based more in Shemayim, some are based more within us, and then there's kind of bridges in between the two. These are obviously more mystical type of concepts, but if we can just picture, I mean, he actually says in Mashal, he says, imagine you have a glass blower. So the glass blower will have, if you ever seen glass blowing, you have, you know, the glass, you'll have a tube, and then you have the breath. So the breath is, let's say, Kevyachol, that's in Shemayim. It's Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem breathes into Adam the soul of life. There's a tube that it goes through, and then there's the kli, the glass, which is forming. So you have within yourself, you know, the end of that breath, which is in us, that's the neshama in the body. There's a bridge connecting us to the upper worlds, and there's the upper worlds where this breath comes from. That's the imagery he gives to it. That's how we view it. So our neshama is connected to the upper worlds. No, we're connected up there. We're totally connected to the upper worlds, which means that we have parts of us that are divided up in the Elyonim, and parts of us that are down here in the Tachtonim. We have to look at the image of ourselves, is that we have ourselves up there and down here. So myself, which is down here, can totally achieve to connect myself up there. It's the Nefesh HaChaim also, he points out, I think it's actually quote from the Zohar, he points out, we find in the Torah that Hashem goes to Avraham Avinu. And he says to him, Avraham, Avraham. He repeats his name twice. Hashem goes to Moshe, and he says also, Moshe, Moshe. He repeats the name twice. So the Zohar makes another point I mentioned in a second. But when you say the two names, so the way it's explained is that, you know, there's an image of Avraham Avinu up in Shemayim. That's the perfect Avraham Avinu. That's how he's supposed to be. Then there's the one here down on earth, which is trying to do the right things, make the right choices, and achieve. If someone on this world can perfect themselves, they will match their model in Shemayim. There's a model of each and every one of us in Shemayim, which we're supposed to match. We're put down here on earth trying to achieve that. But if we do the right thing, it's one that matching that model. So if Hashem can go to a person and say, Avraham, Avraham, Hashem is saying the Avraham in Shemayim matches the Avraham down here on earth. If Hashem goes to Moshe, Moshe, Hashem is saying the Moshe in Shemayim matches the one on earth. Because look, you can connect, you can achieve, you can go up there. And they're able to. The Zohar, this is interesting, the Zohar points out that if you look at the truck, so in between Avraham and Avraham, there's actually a pause. And Moshe, Moshe, there's no pause. So Sfarim explained, because Avraham was still kind of a step removed. Like he wasn't as perfect as Moshe, you know, in whatever worlds we're talking about. Moshe, Moshe, there was no pause. Like there was no difference between Moshe and Shemaya and Moshe in this world, they were the same. Avraham, Avraham, there was like a little bit. So for us, there might be a much longer pause, you know. But for Avraham, there's a little tiny pause, which just showed that he wasn't quite the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. But what it means to me on a simple level is that we are totally, totally connected with the upper worlds. We can connect. If we didn't have this possibility, so then we wouldn't even have the drive or the thought to connect. The upper waters and the lower waters are divided because the lower waters have to know this. There's waters up in the Shemayim as well. And you can connect to those waters. That you belong there. That's really where you belong. Just to take another mashal. You know, if you have an electronic and it has no Bluetooth capability, let's say. So that's not connected to your Bluetooth, no matter how hard you try. But if there's a stereo that's there's a speaker with a Bluetooth capability and your phone has Bluetooth capability, so they can connect. You have to connect them, they can connect. So having the waters in Shemayim says waters, there is capability for you to connect. It's there. You could connect. Having our neshama connecting from Shemayim down to earth, having our model person in the Shemayim to match us down to earth shows that you can connect, you can get there. It's possible. It's not impossible. It might take some work, but it's not impossible. So if you look at the idea of the Rakia and the Mayim, so let's go back to our whole discussion. Now the Rakia divides between heaven and earth. And the Mayim, some are put up in the spiritual realms, and some are put down here in the physical realm. So the Mayim that's just left up in the spiritual realm, so that's there to show the Mayim down here. You could connect to what's up there. The reason it wasn't all put up there was because we're trying to show that you want to be able to achieve your lofty heights. If I just put everything up in the Shemayim, then there's no message, you have to achieve it yourself. But Hashem says, I'm putting some water down on earth to be a model, to show us that you have to earn your way back. If you want to achieve his alus, his demaral, you want to achieve some sort of elevation, some sort of, you know, sense of purpose in life, you have to get it yourself, because if you don't earn it yourself, it's not really you. So I think that's the model. Now, so now we see this cute little story has a lot of depth to it. And it's really a model for the human being to understand, what are we doing here on earth? What's our goal? We're put here on earth, and the neshama says, get me back up there. I want to go back up there again. It's like the water is crying. And we're put here because Hashem says, I need you to be down here right now because you need to earn your keep. You have to achieve the reward. You can't just be given a reward. You have to achieve that reward. You have to earn that reward. So when the lower waters cry, I would suggest this cry, it's not a cry of sadness. You can say it's a cry of their yearning. When the lower waters are yearning, we want to reconnect to the Elyonim. We want to get there. It's a crying, I don't think it's necessarily of sadness, we'll call it ishtokukus. There's a burning aspiration, a burning desire to reconnect those upper waters. The existence of Mayim Elyonim, that brings yearning to the Tachtonim, that they could get up there, they can make it. So to us, you know, the neshama we have tells us you can connect, you can achieve, you can accomplish, you can become much more spiritual, and you can achieve your purpose. You could do that. The whole physical world, I think, really yearns to connect to the spiritual world. Like Maral said, the derech of everything is to try to yearn to reach its purpose. Everything wants to be able to achieve its own elevation. And we in this world, we have to yearn to connect to those upper worlds. So Hashem promises the water. He says, water, don't worry. You'll get there. There's karbanos. You'll be salt, and you'll be salted in the karbanos, and you'll be burnt up on the Mizbeach and ascend to Shemayim. And also on Sukkot, we have Nisach HaMayim. You know, Nisach HaMayim on Sukkot, they used to draw water. They could party around it. Sukkot Shoeva came from drawing the water. They would take it, they would pour it on the Mizbeach. And that was the entire Avodah. But that was a karban. And a karban means also that this is going to, this is called ascending up to Shemayim. That's that you're connecting back to your source. We're sending you back up to where you belong. So that's the promise Hashem gives. And karbanos really, I think, are the most direct example of this. The whole idea of the karban is you have something totally physical, an animal. It's blood, guts, and gore. It's totally physical. And you burn it and you elevate it to something totally spiritual. You're showing that even the most physical object, like an animal, can also connect up to spirituality. That's what it can do. You're taking an example of the Olam HaGashmi, the physical world, and you're showing how it has the total ability to connect to the spiritual. Nisach HaMayim on Sukkot is also this point. You know, you're taking water, which, you know, water really is the life force of our world, and you're dumping on this Mizbeach, and you're connecting it back. You know, if you think about the physical world thrives on water. You know, water is what's needed to make anything grow and function. And take that water and dump it on the Mizbeach, it's the same exact point. The water is, it's like a homecoming. The water is returned to its source. You know, the lower waters get to be poured on the Mizbeach, and they get to connect to those upper waters once again. As an aside, I think that's it's on Sukkot. Sukkot is also this concept. Sukkot is the ability to take anything physical and make it spiritual. Sukkot is the one I always tell my kids on Sukkot. You know, you can go in the Sukkot and play Monopoly, and it's mitzvah deraisa. You know, so my kids like playing Monopoly on Sukkot. But because anything you do in a Sukkot becomes a mitzvah. Mm-hmm. You can taking a nap. You can be eating a bowl of cereal. You can be playing a game. You can be talking on your phone. You can be anything. You can be doing your taxes, and it's a mitzvah deraisa because you're living in the Sukkot. So it shows you that anything in this physical world can totally become spiritual. It has that ability. That's what Sukkot is. So Nisach HaMayim, and this whole concept very much fits the concept of Sukkot. Another point which is made is very interesting. The word Bereishis itself, this is something that we didn't talk about. The word Bereishis itself, you find, you know, dozens and dozens of different drushas in that word. I mean, it's the first word in the Torah. I think the Vilna Gaon says that word contains the entire Torah within it, one way or the other. It's all there in that one word. So you find, like, you know, we find so many different ways to explain the word Bereishis. So one thing the Chazal say about Bereishis, the Medrash says, you can divide the word into Bara Shis. Bara, Hashem created. Shis refers to the foundations, like Evan HaShasia, the idea of a foundation. And what it refers to in particular is what's called Shisin. Shisin is under the Beis HaMikdash. There are like these tunnels. It was the foundation that really David HaMelech dug this foundation. We know that Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, but David laid the foundations. It's called Shisin. And Shisin is where when you pour the liquid karbanos, the wine or the water on the Mizbeach, it would ascend down into Shisin. So this is really the place where the waters of Nisach HaMayim would gather. The wine as well. Every day they'd pour wine on the Mizbeach. That's part of the karban tamin. Many karbanos had nisachim with wine. And that wine would drain down through these pipes into the Shisin. That's where it would go. So the Shisin is the area where any liquid karban would gather. So in other words, we could put that, the Shisin is the place where these physical items, the things of the Elyonim, of the Tachtonim, excuse me, of the lower worlds, would get their chance to connect up to the Elyonim. That's the Shisin, because if the karban's being poured there, that means that's connecting it up to Shemayim. So that's in the word Bereishis itself, Bara Shis. Hashem made Shisin, because Shisin the concept of it is an essential part of life, which is that we're trying to take things in this physical world, and we're trying to connect them up to Shemayim. So within Bereishis itself, Hashem says, "I created this concept of Shisin, which allows those lower waters in order to reconnect once again to the upper waters." So I think this is how we can explain this Medrash and this Rashi and the idea of the Rakia, at least on one level, that's the purpose of it. The Rakia, again, it means something physical, whatever it means, but at least on a deeper level, you know, Al-Derech Remez or Al-Derech Drush, and we understand it to show us the divide between the upper waters and lower waters and how those waters connect back again. So we have to ask ourselves now, like, what does this mean to us? How do we apply this in our daily lives? We keep, you know, I said in the title of this year, what does it mean to us as part of the idea. So this is a deep concept. It's a very fundamental concept of Yiddishkeit. But how can we apply this on a daily level? So I think a big lesson for us is to be able to embrace a challenge and know that the Maima Tachtonim also cried because they wanted to connect to Hashem and they were thrown down here in this world. And Hashem told those lower waters, you know, you're here for a reason, because I don't want to give you any freebies, because you wouldn't like that. That's not good for you. I need you to have challenges. I need you to be here in the lower world and achieve that good. So when we have to go through a difficult time, we have a hard choice to make, we chas v'shalom, there's a suffering, something that's difficult for us in this world, in Isayon. So the tool we have to use in order to get persevere and to get through the Nisayon in a productive way and accomplish is to know that Hashem gave this to us just so we can earn our keep. Because, you know, this is all for our good. Hashem gave this to us so we can achieve and so we can get the greatest good possible. It's hard to think that way sometimes. It really is. But this is, it's such a fundamental lesson of Yiddishkeit and what it means to live in this world. That's what it's all about. So those Maimachtonim, they cried. You know, the cry could have been out of difficulty. It could have been sadness, it could have been yearning, and they did cry. It's difficult to be stuck in a difficult situation. It's very hard to cast down into the lower worlds. It's hard for it. But Hashem told it, don't worry, you're going to be put into the karbanos. Now this is all in order so that you can rise up again to Shemayim. That's what it's for. That's the purpose of it all. And that appeased them, because they said, okay, now we see that, you know, this was, like the Maharal said, this is not lowly. I'm not being demoted. Rather, I'm just as good or even better than the upper waters now, because I'm going to get to where they are, but I'm going to get there and earn it and achieve it. And that's a much bigger thing. I mean, also just to think about the image we spoke about, you know, the idea of Moshe, Moshe, Avram, all of us have that. You know, all of us have that image up in Shemayim. Everyone has potential. And that potential, Hashem has the perfect deal up in Shemayim. He has that model. And then we have ourselves down here on earth, which we don't quite match that model yet. But it's a lifetime to work on matching that model. And I think it's a very motivational thing to know that there is a model of me doing fulfilling my potential, and just to be able to reach that is a very, very inspirational idea. So we have to know we could reach lofty levels, because Hashem has up in Shemayim for us our match. Our twin is up there waiting for us. That's like the upper waters, lower waters. It's there. And it's that yearning to constantly reconnect to the source. It should become natural to us. You know, the Maharal said that everything naturally yearns to reach its fulfillment. And I think it's kind of innate. Everyone wants to be their best. People want to fulfill the potential. And to know what that is, how far we can go, and to understand we have a neshama in Shemayim which we can connect to, you know, like the glass blower. If we know that, so then it really motivates us. And when a difficult thing comes our way, when a difficult decision comes our way, when a challenge comes our way, and we're able to put it all into context and know this is all just so I can reconnect. That's what it's here for. And if I'm able to persevere and make the right choices and deal with the challenges in the proper way, that will bring me up to Shemayim once again.